once, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
It's so cold complaints have you had to put up with today? Or maybe the question should be, how many times have you complained or grumbled about it today? I love it. It makes you appreciate the nasty old hot summer even more. Now, if that is the question, this is the answer. AM 660, the answer that is, and we are the American Adversaries at Drive Time. Lair Adams here, and I can't wait till I'm unemployed and can start feeding at the public trough. Heck, no one should have to work. Unlimited unemployment for all will solve the unemployment problem and save our economy. So say the socialist, communist, Marxist devils who now ruin this nation. For now, here's our host, the king of the anti-nanny state, Christopher Hart.
Oh, Lair Adams, you give him way too much credit. I would say, so say the morons, because only somebody who doesn't understand anything at all about economics would say the things that are coming out of the president's mouth today and the White House and this entire Democratic Party and administration. As Lair said, welcome to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time on AM 660, The Answer. 407-774-8255 is that number. We are live. We'll be here with you till 6 o'clock. You know that. It is cold out there right now. I haven't been complaining because guess what? Tomorrow it's going to be warm again. So this will be gone really quickly. As Lair said, please enjoy it while you can. At least it's a beautiful day in terms of, you know.
Gosh, I love it. We need this.
Gorgeous, clear.
Yep.
If only we could have gotten maybe a little bit more rain when this thing came through.
Seriously, folks, we need almost at least 2 or 3 days of temperatures in the 20s, and we need it for this reason, to kill off the fleas, the ticks, and also a lot of the mosquito larvae, and also they've had so many problems with citrus this year, and a lot of people I've read put it to the fact we have not had any really cold temperatures in years, and this would have normally killed off a lot of the bacteria and spores and stuff like that.
As a matter of fact, the orange crop in Florida this year is going to be one of the smallest in many years, perhaps
whatever
decades.
That thing's going around is, it killed the orange tree in my front yard. I'm afraid it's killed the really nice one in my backyard.
No. Okay, folks, we've got Abe Katzman going to join us today. So he'll be with us here in just a little while. We've got a lot to talk about with him when he does join us. I've got an interesting layoff letter I would like to read to you at the end of the show. But in the meantime, I said it Sunday night. I'll say it again here real quickly. The football gods have spoken. If you watched that game last night, it was another excellent game, the BCS Championship Bowl game. Congratulations to the Florida State Seminoles for a dramatic victory. They proved that not only can they win big, but they can also win ugly. And that they did last night. Although it was a very entertaining game, they had a fake field goal, punt fake that they were able to turn into a touchdown, and they had a 100-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. Auburn was steady and solid throughout the game. It just their luck just ran out as Mike McBath thought it might would, but nonetheless it was a fantastic game last night, and once again another finger in the eye of all those people out there who are trying to give football a black eye. The football gods have spoken. They say, no, this is a great game, and here's a season to prove it. Once again, congratulations to the Florida State Seminoles and the UCF Knights, of course, on their big BCS victory. All right, let's get back to business at hand. We could sit here for 2 hours and go over the idiotic statements that were made by the president this afternoon, talking about how, and this is right out of Pelosi's, he took this from that economic genius, Nancy Pelosi, to say that, unemployment compensation creates jobs.
Well, this is the total socialist mantra, Chris.
Well, it's you're
very
giving
mantra,
too much credit. Socialists are even a little bit smarter than that. We have to see these people for what they are. This is laughable. It is moronic. It is imbecilic. It is idiotic. These are the adjectives that you described this stuff with. This is not economic sense at all. Makes no economic sense at all, I should say. Listen to what Dirty Harry Reid said. Dirty Harry said, never in the history of our republic have we had such long-term unemployment. Does he ever remember the Depression? Does he remember things like that? Does he not know that what he just said was that his great and glorious president, who's had charge of the government for 5 years now, is incompetent and impotent in his policies? And that's what he's admitting. This is all laughable. I mean, he's so stupid as to say something like that in defense of what they're trying to do. Anybody with any sense and thinks about it a little bit can say, it's bad because look who the president is, you fool. So why should we follow these policies indefinitely? But you have to hand it to him. It's a great political issue for them to be on, right? Especially and particularly because the Republicans seem so inept at coming up with a counter-argument, which is a very simple counter-argument. And that is the only thing that creates jobs, you idiots, is a healthy economy. Unemployment insurance has nothing to do with it.
Well, go back to your stupid claim. I mean, you basically just said they've done this whole thing for votes, which is exactly what Mitch McConnell said today, and it's what we all know, but it's an effective way of winning votes.
Well, when it comes to politics, they are as smart as a fox. When it comes to everything else, they are as dumb as a stump. Let's put it that way. I'll give them that. They know how to work a political issue. Mm-hmm. Do they know how to make a solution work? Oh, no way. No way. And it's because they are stupid. I'm sick and tired of characterizing it any other way. I mean, when we think that they are so clever as to bring about all this destruction and everything as some sinister plot, that gives them way too much credit. That buys into the argument that they are actually as smart as they think they are, which they are not.
I think it's always dangerous to underestimate your enemy.
I am not underestimating them. What I am saying is to beat them. The first thing that we have to understand is that they are not as smart as they think. If we continue to think that they are that smart, then we're already putting ourselves behind the eight ball.
Well, they're obviously smart enough to win, so we have to accept that fact.
I would say it this way. The Republicans have been dumb enough to lose. And this is what I'm talking about. Same result, but it's a whole different way of looking at the problem. You see, mm-hmm. I'm looking at the problem because our people aren't up to the task of taking on morons. So what does that make them? Something less. That's the problem here. The Republicans don't seem to be up to the task. I don't blame the president and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi mm-hmm. for going out and saying this idiocy. As long as they can get away with it. As long as it works for them. More power to them. It's up to the Republicans in an adversarial form of government to step up to the plate and hit the softballs.
Okay.
And that's what's going on here. Excuse my passion here, but it's just so frustrating when they come out with this idiocy, this absolute lunacy and idiocy. Now, supposedly Marco Rubio is going to make a statement tomorrow. Well, what's the matter with today? What's the matter with them marching out there on the Senate floor and laughing at the president and Harry Reid and making fun of this idiocy? And saying, yes, Mr. President, we're glad that now you're following the economic wisdom of one Nance Pelosi.
Well, it's because that argument won't fit as well with the voters as the argument of, hey, we are saving people's jobs and we are feeding people by helping them with unemployment.
So you're telling me that now the Republicans don't have a clue about that either. And you're absolutely right.
Well, see,
they need to have
things...
That's part of the counter argument is the better solution. And they don't seem to be prepared to present one.
And see, I don't know this phase whether the truth is even an effective argument against their argument.
That's
their
why
sales
I
pitch.
Say, and that's why we say, politics is a whole lot like professional wrestling. Because in professional wrestling, it's the passion, the emotion that makes it all work. And that's where the Democrats have it, you know, tower over the Republicans.
Absolutely.
The Republicans are just stone deaf, stone cold stupid when it comes to politics. I'm sorry to say that. But somebody who is the exact opposite of that is our very own Abe Katzman, who's on the line from Jerusalem now. So we're going to take the break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Abe Katzman. We'll get his thoughts on some of the stuff the president said today, and then also about what's going on over on his neck in his neck of the woods.
Well, and the president, too, is basically just talking to the people that have been told all this nonsense for the last 15 or 20 years of their lives,
and
the young people.
And whose fault is that?
We
the
let
people
them...
who do not come up with the counter arguments.
Hey, this is Johnny B. Badd, the Badd Man of World Championship Wrestling, and I'm here to tell you, listen to the American adversaries. They may be some bad men, but they're great guys.
All right, welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. That's right, we are the American Adversaries on AM 660, The Answer. And we got an answer man on the line with us right now. Of course, that's our man, Abe Katzman. You can find his work at abekatzman.com and really all over the place in terms when he writes his articles. But he's with us now, and so I'd like to welcome him on, and Happy New Year to you, Abe Katzman.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you guys.
Yeah, thank you very, very much.
Hadn't talked to you since last year.
Yeah, it's been a year. A whole year since. How was the trip home? Was everything uneventful? And so you're back in Jerusalem tonight, I think.
I'm back in Jerusalem.
Yeah. Okay. Abe, first of all, you might have caught the tail end of our conversation there at the beginning, at which point, you know, I was on the one hand calling the president a moron because of his economic theory, but on the other hand, I was complimenting him on his political audacity, if you will. Had you heard what he said at the White House today? Do you have any thoughts on it?
I only heard what you said and was able to discern from there probably what he said. I take it, you know, that if he was repeating the Nancy Pelosi's point that nothing is better for economic growth than unemployment benefits, well, then we ought to have an economic boom. We should have had one all along.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. How many times has it been? Have they increased unemployment? And I don't see any great benefit from it. I mean, have they extended it?
Sure. Yeah. And Lair was poking fun in his opening comments, basically saying, you know, why don't we all go on unemployment? Then we really would have a boom. And it's just absurdity. But what frustrates me so much, Abe, is that it seems to take the Republicans a while to figure out a response when they should be there. Boom, boom, boom. Somebody should have been right out there responding to the president and pointing out the absurdity of his argument.
Well, that's what you're there for.
Okay.
Yeah, but we preach to the choir.
No, we preach to. We got a number of liberals in the audience. They're out there.
Yeah, but we're not changing their minds, I don't think.
Well, you never know. It's always worth a try. Abe, there, one thing I've been wondering since you were on with us last, and we talked about your article. Even with Mushroom, please correct me if I get the title wrong because I don't have it right in front of me. But there's even a silver lining to Mushroom Clouds. Is that what it was titled?
Close enough.
Okay. Did you get any response to that? What was the reaction that you got throughout Israel there?
As usual, the reaction was mixed. there were some people who thought that I was right on the mark with that, saying that it's a good read of the diplomatic situation, and other people who thought that I was grasping at straws trying to find a silver lining to what is a very dire set of circumstances in terms of how the Iranian nuclear issue has been handled or mishandled.
Yeah, and I don't think that you took that lightly. It certainly comes across to me talking to you that you very much understand the dire situation, but that you are recognizing things that are happening nonetheless. And it seems to me that you kind of get ahead of things as well. In particular, I'm talking about before this article, you wrote an article about the rhetoric over there coming out of Palestine from the people who are supposedly wanting to make peace with Israel, how they go home and then they talk about Israelis being dogs and this and want to destroy Israel and this and that and the other thing.
Let's be precise. It's apes and pigs.
Yeah. Okay. Evidently,
not dogs.
I think I saw something in the media. It was over here yesterday or today that evidently there was a presentation in the Israeli Knesset this past weekend as to the most recent examples of this.
Yeah, the one of the ministers has taken this on as a high profile issue. Actually had an op-ed in the New York Times about this right about the time that I wrote my column. He points out that, in essence, that there is a big problem trying to make peace with people who seem to have no interest in making peace and who are not preparing their populations at all for peace. On the contrary, they are dehumanizing Israelis. They are ratcheting up all sorts of war rhetoric. It isn't good. It's all their textbooks are loaded with this stuff. Sorry.
That's okay.
It's constant on television, on radio. It's just incessant. And he made a presentation, this minister made a presentation to the Knesset, just highlighting some of what's going on. I mean, it would take weeks to document everything that's been happening, even over the last couple of months.
Folks, we're talking with our man from Jerusalem, Abe Katzman. You can call us and be a part of the conversation if you like, 407-774-8255.
Yeah, Abe, really quickly, to add to this mix, you know, with all the turmoil going on, what about the falling of the two cities in Iraq? And what's that, Fallujah and Ramadi?
Ramadi?
I mean, that's got to put people that much more on edge. And are there any talks about, hey, maybe we'll try to help out or offer some kind of assistance?
Well, I don't think the U.S. is...
We're not doing anything.
We're sending in troops. We'll see what kind of assistance they actually offer. I don't think it's going to be much. And I think that it's just a continuation of the squandering of whatever gains we had in Iraq that were hard won.
Yes.
Cost a lot of money and a lot of lives, but we had gains, and this administration has just given them away. And here, you know, how many lives did it cost to take Fallujah, to take Ramadi, to take the Anbar to turn the Anbar province back, to not be aligned with Al Qaeda, and that's what happens. You pull the support system out. With really without having anything in its place, and we see what happens. Power, you know, as they say, nature abhors a vacuum. Well, so does power.
Yeah,
if you pull power out, some other power is going to come in.
Sure, Chris has mentioned that point many times. I mean, it's just horrific, like you say, what we've spilled there. But now this administration, I'm sure, is going to say, well, look how wise we are for not spilling any more to keep them safe and keep it in check. But nope, that's the way they're going to present it, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think that that this is just kind of cementing certain ideas in the heads of other allies, particularly the Saudis. Once again, they're seeing another example of this is what happens when America disengages, and it doesn't look like America wants to be particularly engaged. whether it's with Iran or with Syria, and they are not happy.
You mentioned Syria. There are a number of media outlets over here, Abe, who are indicating that what happened in Fallujah and Ramadi in Iraq in general, and also what's going on in Lebanon, the increase in violence and weapons going into Lebanon, is a direct spillover of the Syrian conflict, where obviously the Obama administration has had the least interest of doing anything. Is that the way it's being seen over there as well?
Yeah, it's seen as part of, it was at one point, the Syrian conflict was kind of limited to just Syria, but it's taken on much more of a religious sectarian war. It seems to be, it's Sunni against Shiite or against Alawite in that case, which is a branch of Shiism. And I think that people look at this also having witnessed a Lebanese civil war that lasted, that began in 1975. Israel sees this type of stuff as being part of a bigger picture, part of a more regional sectarian kind of struggle.
Yeah.
And when you keep in mind that this is a struggle, the Shiite-Sunni battle has been going on for 1,400 years.
Yeah.
Don't think it's gonna be solved tomorrow.
No. Yeah, we talked about this Sunday night as well. Abe, stay right there with us, if you will, and we'll talk more about this when we come back. We're the American Adversaries Drive Time on AM 660. The Answer. Please don't go away.
Here is tonight's American Adversary SoundbiteRx.com News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Tonight's SoundbiteRx.com News Minute is being brought to you by Lake Mary Jewelers. For that special gift, for that special someone, go to Lake Mary Jewelers at the intersection of Lake Mary Boulevard and Lake Emma Road. Call them today, 407-878-6230. Now, here's Christopher Hart with Ted Bogert of SoundbiteRx.com.
Folks, as is typical with big government liberals, when one of their big government programs doesn't work, or, as in the case of the implementation of Obamacare, it's a glaring failure, their solution is always another layer of government. Take this story, which you can find at soundbiterx.com. In the wake of the glitch-ridden launch of the United States government's online health insurance marketplace, the Obama administration is reportedly considering loosening the requirements for hiring federal tech workers and establishing a special agency to oversee future tech projects, according to the Wall Street Journal. No final plan has been crafted, but several broad new efforts are being considered, including giving government agencies, such as the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, those are the ones responsible for healthcare.gov, by the way, the ability to engage in direct hiring of software developers. Currently, federal agencies are required to sift through multiple job candidates for tech hires and give preference to veterans, amongst other requirements. They also have up to 80 days to make a decision, but the White House wants to speed that process up. The White House is also said to be evaluating the idea of having government tech workers rotate through private sector companies. Oh, what a unique idea. But the problem with that, of course, is that the unions would never allow it. It is priceless, however, folks, to bear witness to big government getting in the way of big government advocates. It so frustrates this president that he constantly seeks, and often succeeds, to bypass big government by, that's right, folks, increasing its size. Seems like someone, Barack Obama, described that type of behavior in 2008 as insane. I think he was right, at least back then. Please, folks, get that booster for your sanity at SoundbiteRx.com. It's good medicine. We'll be right back.
This is Sunny, the California girl from Gorgeous Laser Wrestling. We're all champions in the ring, including all the hottest guys on American Adversaries. Love
you. American Adversaries, and thank you, Sonny. Lair Adams here with Christopher Hart on the line right now. We have Abe Katzman in Jerusalem. And I got to tell you, folks, Abe Katzman is the man they modeled the Sphinx after. I got to tell you.
The Sphinx.
The Sphinx, yes. He has that look about him, you know.
Yes.
Well, if you imagine
royalty, strength, courage, all those things.
Yeah, all the good parts of the Sphinx there, Abe. It's great to talk with you. And, Abe, you know, we'll go back to some of the turmoil going on out there in the Middle East. But let me ask you this. With the president, I almost said, with our Premier Obama, in the White House saying unemployment.
When you say that.
Yes, exactly. Talking about the unemployment and how paying unemployment just really is a boon for the economy. What's it like in Israel? What are your unemployment rules generally? How long can you be on unemployment? Is it similar to here?
It's actually fairly generous. It's more generous than what the law was back before the financial crisis. But it is not as generous as what now. I mean, the amount of time you can spend on unemployment now in America is really kind of gotten to the point where it's indistinguishable from welfare.
Sure. They keep extending it, and we've seen no benefits.
If anything, that seems to be the intent. You know, on the one hand, the president comes out and says, I don't know anybody who's on welfare who wouldn't rather have a job. I hear people all the time that say, you know, I can do better on welfare, or excuse me, I mean unemployment, than having a regular job. I mean, it's just so counterproductive. But once again, it so frustrates to me that, I mean, obviously the Republicans knew this was coming. I mean, we were talking about this last week before the president got back from his vacation and left Michelle in Hawaii for whatever reason. It's so easy for the Republicans to be prepared for this stuff.
They're frozen with fear.
And yet they seem caught so unprepared so many times. Somebody who seems to be now wise to this president, of course, is Prime Minister Netanyahu. There's a couple of articles in today's Wall Street Journal I want to talk to you about. Abe, the first one has to do with with John Kerry and his shuttle diplomacy going on. Is he in the Middle East right now, by the way? I know he was on his way over there just the other day.
He came, he left, and he will be back.
Okay.
But he's not at the moment. I think you are blessed with his presence.
Oh.
America once again.
Well, it makes me feel that much more secure tonight, I tell you.
Yeah, I bet it makes you guys feel real secure when he shows up.
You'll all be able to sleep better. We'll have nightmares. But the article, the first one I want to refer to is by Brett Stevens. It's called John Kerry, Secretary of Unreality. And it talks about how he's forging ahead as though he's actually making progress when no real progress is getting made. First of all, is that assessment basically correct?
I think that is a very accurate assessment.
Okay. His overriding point is that it doesn't seem to matter to Mr. Kerry, and evidently not to the president either. And it sort of harkens back to the Iranian deal, and it kind of reminds me of that they just want to have a deal so they can say they have a deal, and it doesn't seem to matter what the terms are or if the deal is in any way realistic or not. And by the way, according to the Wall Street Journal, that Iranian deal has not gone into effect yet, may go into effect at the end of this month, may not. It may end up being a one-year deal instead of 6 months, depending on when it ever does get implemented, Abe?
Yeah, it's, I think I called it something like a preliminary draft framework, something, whatever. I mean, it's not a deal, that's for sure.
And that's what appears to be happening.
It's not even a deal to make a deal.
Right, and that's what appears, what he's saying is, if they come away with something, it's not going to be a real deal. And if that's the case, it's going to be far, probably worse to have it than not. I'm talking in terms of Palestine and the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Yeah. Right now, they're talking in terms of a framework. But a framework for what exactly? Whether it's a framework for continued talks or a framework for another framework? It's the term they keep on throwing around, but everybody seems to have a different idea of what it means. And the bottom line is that any kind of framework is not going to be binding on anybody. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, he has been apparently, the story is that he has been encouraging the Europeans to threaten sanctions against Israel against banning or specially labeling products that that come from across the green line, from the territories, from and apparently that's the story that's leaked out, is that apparently he's encouraged a number of European governments to threaten Israel that if these talks are not don't have a successful completion, that they should unleash these sanctions.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that because I've seen the same reports in the media here that he's actually building pressure against Israel and demanding concessions from Israel once again, as though that strategy has ever worked before. Abe, we've got a bunch more questions for you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say the whole thing is kind of surreal. The biggest problem with all of this remains that the Palestinian leadership has never recognized Israel as the state, the nation state of the Jewish people. And until they do that, there's really not that much to talk about. You can make all kinds of interim agreements, but if they don't end, there's no way to end the conflict if they don't say, okay, we agree, you're allowed to have your state. They haven't said it. They won't say it. They, in fact, affirmatively refuse to say it. So that's really where the underlying problem lies. You can make all the other interim agreements you want and all the other terms and all the other pieces of the framework, but that's the piece that gets you to the finish line as far as Israel.
And the Europeans are always willing to throw that little piece into it about, yeah, okay, we'll go with that, or we'll get them to declare you a state if you give them more land. That's what the Europeans are, basically. That's what that huddle's all about. We know that,
well,
Abe.
And I think you're hitting the nail on the head, really, Abe, there, because not only is it a problem, but it's dangerous. Brett Stevens starts off his article talking about a fellow by the name of Frank Kellogg, who, along with a number of 85 United States senators and 62 countries, in 1928, they outlawed war.
Right. I mean, Briand Pact.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And when you have this type of mentality out there working with these.
So Hitler broke the law?
He sure enough did.
Doggone.
Can you imagine that? All right, Abe, as I said.
And not only that, he won a Nobel Peace Prize for it.
That's right.
Well, just like Arafat.
That's right. And another fella. Name of Barack. Let's go now. Abe,
I've got
a caller on the line who has a question for you. Then I have another one or two for you as well before you go. So please stay with us. Michael is on the line. Thank you for calling, sir.
Hey, guys, quick question for Abe. You know, war is kind of eerie, and it's terrible, obviously, but people sort of get the feeling that something is imminent. And I'm wondering if the Israeli people have that sentiment about them at this time.
Thank you, Michael. Abe?
Good question.
I think the Israeli people do not feel that any kind of protracted war is imminent. It's quite possible that in the near future there might be some kind of attack on Iran, and that would probably come with some sort of reciprocal attack from the Iranian allies of Hezbollah. So there would probably be plenty of missiles raining down on Israel. Mm-hmm. Whether that would create a protracted war, hard to say. But the feeling in Israel is not one of dread that war is right around the corner.
Now that you mentioned that, there was another article that I wanted to ask you about. This is from a Wall Street Journal back on December 12th. And I held this out because I wanted to ask you about it. It's by Norman. Please forgive me if I mispronounce his name, but I believe it's Podhortz. His article is entitled "Strike Now to Avert Disaster Later." You can imagine what he's saying. Just a quick clip: a conventional weapons attack is preferable to the nuclear war sure to come. Is that sort of what you're referring to there, Abe? Some thinking of that sort of thing?
Well, it is thinking along those lines. The thing is that Israel can simply not tolerate Iran with a nuclear weapon. That Iran is not, you know, it's not as if like France having a nuclear weapon.
Right.
They will use it to bully other countries. They may use it to try to wipe Israel off the map. Israel is a small country. Most of its population lives in an area about the size of Rhode Island. So one nuclear weapon could really take care of the whole country.
Not only that, but it would give them, essentially, it would put them in the driver's seat of OPEC. They would be able to tell the other oil-producing nations how to run their business.
That's right. They would call the shots for the entire region, and nobody would be able to do anything about it.
Yep. You mentioned Hezbollah. In spite of Israeli attempts, it appears as though more and more sophisticated missiles are being slipped into Lebanon and the areas surrounding Israel. Is Israel doing? Can they do anything to bolster their defenses or be better prepared for that eventuality?
I'm sure they're working on it, but it was not considered good news, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It was considered very serious when the reports of those particular missiles came in. There are certain anti-ship missiles in particular that are three times as fast as anything else out there. Apparently, they have a guidance system that's more sophisticated than anything else. And Israel is going to have to do something. They're going to have to scramble to figure out how to defend against this. I give a lot of credit. Israeli ingenuity is second to none when it comes to the military. But it doesn't mean that they don't have windows of vulnerability.
And, of course, if something does happen and Israel responds, they're going to, I would assume, want to make it decisive.
That's always the debate. You can make certain strikes, let's say against Hezbollah, against Lebanon. I mean, Israel has pretty much told Lebanon that it will be held responsible for attacks that come from Lebanese territory. The Lebanese government won't be able to say, hey, it wasn't us, it was just Hezbollah. And Israel's saying, no, you guys tolerate them. They're part of your government. You are responsible, and the lights are going out in Beirut if anything serious happens to us. There's always a temptation to make it conclusive, but then you get the world starts to step in, the UN gets involved, the US, everybody's clamoring for a ceasefire. These UN ceasefires always work against the party that is attacked, because the ceasefire doesn't stop the attack, the ceasefire stops the counterattack.
Right. Right. Kind of reminds me of when you're watching football and these two guys go to scuffling.
The exact same thing.
Yeah. The one guy who always throws the second blow gets called for the penalty.
Yep. Always.
I guess great minds think alike, huh, Abe? Listen, there's one last article I want to ask you about. It was in today's Wall Street Journal and by Seth Siegel. And it's entitled A Middle East Accord, No Diplomats Needed. And he talks about something he calls the Red Sea, Dead Sea Project. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Do you know much about it?
Yeah, that's, the Dead Sea is the lowest point on Earth.
On Earth,
and
right.
And it is separated from the Red Sea, which is at sea level, by a valley that runs along the Jordanian-Israeli border. There's been talk for a long time of building a canal for a couple of purposes. One of them would be hydropower to take advantage of that. It's about a 400 meter drop, 1200 foot drop.
Right.
And if they can take advantage of that, they can actually make some power. There also would be desalination plants. That would, and remember, this valley that runs between the Dead Sea and the Red Sea is desert, both Jordanian desert and Israeli desert. So getting fresh water into that area would be a major boon, and they're going ahead with this deal. Actually, I saw the cost estimate for building this thing, and I realized it was actually less than the cost of creating the healthcare.gov website.
That's amazing. And I'm sure it's going to keep a whole lot more people healthier. The thing that intrigued me about this article is that he talks about the Israelis, the Jordanians, and the Palestinians being in on this project.
It's really an Israeli-Jordanian project, and they're kind of bringing the Palestinians in to, you know, they they wouldn't have to. They could do it without the Palestinians, but they're bringing them in really because they look at it as another means of possibly cementing some kind of practical peace. Even if you don't have formal peace, you know, if you start with economic peace, then the formal peace becomes much easier. So they're including the Palestinians in this.
And, of course, there's always the practicality of providing the Palestinians with fresh water so that they don't have that as a demand to make against Israel in the negotiations or something like that, not to mention the humane nature of it.
Yeah. Actually, Israel has been doing quite a bit of desalination and water reclamation. They've vastly increased the amount of fresh water available. So they're basically making the pie bigger, and that should lessen the amount of fighting over how big the piece is.
All right. Abe, I want to thank you so very much once again for being with us tonight. It's always great to have you with us, especially going into the new year, knowing that you're on our side and you're with us. It's a great pleasure and privilege to have you as part of our show.
And your insights, sir.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. Always a pleasure. Stay warm.
All right. We'll try to do that. All right. And you have a great evening over there in Jerusalem. God bless you.
All right.
We'll talk to you next week.
Happy New Year.
Of course, that's our man, Abe Katzman. You can find his work at abekatzman.com. And also, his articles are highlighted on soundbiterx.com.
And it's, I believe it's midnight over there, isn't it? He's always talking to us late. Folks, American Adversaries will be right back.
Yeah, B. Brian Blair, the Killer Bees wrestling fame. And you know, when I want to listen to the truth in politics, I tune into the American Adversaries.
It wouldn't.
We're talking about desalination.
Yes.
Actually, the Red Sea and the Dead Sea both are low. They've been drying up, okay? We're talking about this project over in Israel.
That Abe was talking about.
Right. What they would do is they're building desalination plants. They're going to desalinate water and use that fresh water in the valley that he talked about that borders Israel and Jordan. And they're also going to use fresh water elsewhere in the countries, including for the Palestinians. Now, during the desalination process, you cannot totally desalinate the water. So you take salt water and you take out fresh water and then you have very salty water.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to put that into the Red Sea. It will flow out of the Red Sea and end up into the Dead Sea and raise the water levels in both seas. So, and therefore, enhance the economic impact on the area.
And by the way, folks, the Dead Sea is not a Dead Sea. I've watched the Discovery Channel, and it's full of life and fish and everything else.
It's amazing where they find life on this planet that they didn't think would. There's life in Antarctica. I'm talking about microscopic life.
Oh, and next to volcanic activity in the ocean. I mean, like right next to lava, you have living organisms.
Hot enough to melt lead. That's right. They're called vents at the bottom of the ocean. Real quickly, a couple of quick news bits. Val is in. No, I'm not talking about Val Jarrett. Val Demings is going to run for Orange County Mayor against Teresa Jacobs. We'll see how successful she may be. She evidently has political ambitions. She tried to unseat Congressman Webster last year but couldn't do it. We'll see what happens in Orange County where her husband is the sheriff, so maybe that name recognition will help her do something against Teresa Jacobs. Meanwhile, Liz Cheney is out. She's given up her bid for United States Senate.
Health problems in the family. Have we heard any more about that? Or
no,
are they just keeping tight-lipped?
Just keeping tight-lipped. It evidently was quite a divisive issue in the family, given that her sister is a lesbian. And so that was probably working on all of their health, in particular Dick Cheney's. Of course, you know, he has heart problems, so... We'll see what happens. Obviously, now this is going to make it very easy for that senator, who's a decent senator from Wyoming, he's just not a firebrand, to get that Republican to get reelected. By the way, I got this, folks, from our great sponsor, Pasquale Barba of Cafe Positano. By the way, come join us tomorrow night. We'll be there tomorrow night.
We'd love to see you there.
Yeah, 407-774-8080 is the number if you'd like to make reservations. They're 4 miles west of I-4 on State Road 436. But he got this from a colleague. Now, supposedly this letter was actually used. I don't know if it was or wasn't, but if it wasn't, hopefully it will be or it should have. I'll give it to you right now. It's a layoff letter. Dear employees, as the CEO of this organization, I have resigned myself to the fact that Barack Obama is our president and our taxes and government fees will increase in a big way. To compensate for these increases, our prices would have to increase by about 10%. But since we cannot increase our prices right now due to the dismal state of the economy, we will have to lay off 60 of our employees instead. This has really been bothering me since I believe we are a family here, and I didn't know how to choose who we would have to give up. So this is what I did. I walked through our parking lots and found 60 Obama bumper stickers on our employees' cars and decided that those will be the ones who will get laid off. I can't think of a hold on just a second. I can't think of a more fitting way to approach this problem. They voted for change, so I guess to them they'll have to live with it now. I hope the rest of you at this I will see the rest of you at the annual company picnic.
Yeah, but really,
that's justice.
In a way though, Chris, just think about it. It is a blessing for him to lay those people off. They can now get unemployment, probably unlimited.
And create jobs.
That's right. Oh, that's right. If he lays them off, that will help the economy. Unemployment will go down. The economy's
right.
Going to boom, folks. So quit your jobs and help the economy.
All you poor folks who are in the personnel departments who have to tell these people or issue the pink slips, next time just tell them that it's their patriotic duty to be laid off because now they're going to go out and create jobs.
Now, guys,
it's a good thing.
That's right, because you see, folks, it is true. America is a big, fat, giant sow pig. And she's got a lot of teats, and she's right there for however many piglets want to nurse.
The only thing is, we ain't putting lipstick on that pig. We're rubbing it off around here. That's our job. We're here to expose the sow for what it is. In that sense, I guess, we have the answer. We are AM 660, The Answer, and we are the American Adversaries. It is drive time, and we are out of time, and as often happens all too quickly around here, but we will be back tomorrow night.
You know, Chris, if we can just get the youth of today to accept the answer, not just what we say here, but really, I mean, folks, it's right there in front of your eyes. I know there's things you want in life, but there's things you have to do. And now we're going to do a lot of stuff to bring this country back on track.
The answer is, it is up to us, and we will do it. Good night, everybody.
See you.
A service of Salem Communications. Intelligent, conservative, AM 660.